Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Raise your hand if you've never made a mistake. And I just thought, exactly. Forget the fact that she was 22. 22! Right. When this happened, and with due respect, was not the villain in this story. She just made a mistake. We keep treating ourselves as villains and then living our whole lives to pay for that mistake instead of just saying, it's okay, I made a mistake, I'm going to start over now.
Welcome to the Becoming Her podcast with me, Nikki Spolstra. This is a space where we explore the human experience and the challenges, obstacles, and resiliency that shape who we are. Alongside expert guests and featured friends, I am here to host meaningful conversations that tackle life's complex challenges with humor, grace, and a little bit of sass. You are here for a reason, for the collective growth, so we may deepen our understanding of ourselves and the world around us.
Ladies and gentlemen, so if you've ever looked around at your success and thought, why doesn't this feel better? Today's episode is for you. Joining us is Karen Eldad, better known as Coach Karen, the executive coach to Fortune 500 leaders, Olympic athletes, and high achievers who are outwardly crushing it, but quietly burning out. She's the expert leaders never knew that they needed until they realized that ambition alone is not the answer. As the founder of Wit Enthusiasm Coaching and author of the number one best-selling book, Gilded, Breaking Free from the Cage of Ambition, Perfectionism, and the Relentless Pursuit of More, Karen is reshaping what it means to lead and succeed with clients like Nike, JP Morgan, LVMH, and Estee Lauder, and nearly 500,000 TEDx views. Karen brings sharp insight, unfiltered truth, and tangible tools to help leaders stop chasing and start living. This isn't just about avoiding burnout. It's about redefining success on your own terms. So let's get into it with Karen. Karen, welcome so much. Thank you for being here. Welcome to the Becoming Her podcast.
Oh, thank you. It's such a huge pleasure to be here with you. I sure have become her, haven't I?
I mean, what does that mean for you? Like when you think of like becoming her, like what does that mean for you, Karen?
Well, actually, thank you for the entry because it's perfect. It's a perfect segue. Having an old school mindset would mean that I heard all of those wonderful accolades that precede me and thought, wow, I've really become her. But I've actually become her in a different way, or it means something different to me. It means I've become free to deserve everything I've ever wanted. I've become free to be who I really am. I feel like who I'm supposed to be. That's what becoming her means to me.
You know, it's really beautiful. That's a beautiful testimony because, you know, I went through my own journey of becoming her, which I think is like never ending, to be fair.
Of course,
it is becoming different versions of ourselves over and over and over again. But I remember I have like walked through this big fire of my life. And I remember seeing an acquaintance in the street, like I ran into someone randomly and they were like, oh my gosh, Nikki, I haven't seen you in so long. You know, I don't know how to explain this, but you look how you're supposed to look. Yeah. And it wasn't about my outward appearance. It was about this like energy that I possessed, that I was feeling how I was supposed to feel. And so I was exuding that energy into everything around me. And so I resonate a lot with the way that you described that, and you, that feeling of having everything that you deserve and deserving everything that you have is really, really beautiful.
That really resonates. Carl Jung said, the privilege of a lifetime is to be who you are. And when you finally discover and understand that and let yourself be that, you do exude that energy. That's what's so magnetic.
But how are so many people not doing that? Like how are we, you know, like I love this gilded cage that, that is so like a language that's part of, you know, your whole method and your whole mindset and everything that you teach your clients is, I feel like a lot of us in our souls on a soul level are stuck in a gilded cage. And we have all this outward success. Like you mentioned, like you have all of these accolades, right? That like, like seemingly define who Karen is, right? And these are parts of who you are and the things that you've achieved. And everybody's striving to get more of that or have the house and have the things and have all of like the outward milestone check marks that you're supposed to have, right? But so many people still feel trapped on their insides and they're not really living authentically. And so you coach, I mean, an impressive list of individuals. Like, how do you view, like, Like, what is the symptom? What is the symptom of the stuckness within?
The symptom is a lack of fulfillment. There are feelings like aimlessness and restlessness, boredom, relentless pursuit of more. In other words, you make one achievement and you immediately are thinking about the next. You're living in the gap between where you are and where you wish to be. You are literally in a state of eternal becoming, and it displeases you. When the state of becoming doesn't please you, you're technically in the void, or what I like to call the gilded cage, because success without fulfillment is ultimate failure. To chase and chase and chase, to climb the mountain, to look around and still think, is that all there is, actually means you've missed the point around here. And in my case, in the case of most of my clients, it probably indicates to me that you've put your ladder that you've climbed on so relentlessly on the wrong wall. And you're finally realizing that your only way out will be to climb all the way back down and to rebuild from zero, which is what most people are so afraid of. That's why it's so hard to recognize that you're in a gilded cage, because loss aversion kicks in immediately. And we'd rather stay with the sunken costs.
Loss aversion. Like, let's get into that, because yeah. I just had like a moment when I heard that term, loss aversion.
Loss aversion is one of our principal confirmation biases, or biases of the brain. The brain is a defense system. For anybody out there who is very prone to thinking, I think with my logic and my brain is very sophisticated. No, it's not. No one's is. As the great Daniel Kahneman established well before he died last year in Thinking Fast and Slow, he won a Nobel Prize for this. Most of our brains are designed, all of our brains are designed as a survival tool and not a happiness seeking tool. And that means the brain is constantly looking for ways to keep you alive, not to help you thrive, which means that its principal biases are loss aversion biases. Your brain is so afraid of what it might lose that it would actually not focus on what it might win. It will therefore fold a winning hand. And so a superstar who's already climbed a mountain so aggressively, climbed a ladder all the way to the tippy top, instead of thinking, wow, I'm a superpower who can climb very easily and readily and with skill, thinks, no, I don't want to climb all the way back down. That means I'm going to have to climb all the way back up again. If I were not thinking from loss aversion, but I would be thinking from gain, from what I have to gain, I would go back down and climb up readily. But most people are not willing to do that because of sunken costs. That's so basically it. That's how most superstars, Nikki, look like superstars. And I like to say they look like they're playing to win, when in fact, they're playing not to lose.
Whoa. They look like they're playing to win, but in fact, they're playing not to lose. Is that what you said?
They're playing defense. That's right. You're playing a mediocre game.
Okay. So then this begs the question, like, a lot of these people who are highly skilled, and it takes like a tremendous amount of confidence to put yourself out there over and over and over again, whether you're a CEO or an all-star athlete, they have the confidence to get there. But what you're saying is that that's not a place of fulfillment. It's really out of a place of fear of failure.
That's right. Because they're just to be aggressive in one direction without actually asking yourself whether the direction is right for you is not technically playing to win. It's the biggest misunderstanding about resilience, for example, or perseverance. Just keep doing it. Well, if you suspect that you're not doing it in the right direction of your life, don't do it harder. Your actual job is not to be doing it harder. It's to release, to relax that energy. One of my favorite teachers, Martha Beck, says, if you suspect you don't do sex good, don't do it harder. I love that phrase. It's a simple phrase. It's a silly phrase, but it's a really exciting way to say it's not your game. The real game in life is to actually have the humility to know what is authentically for you and what is not authentically for you, and to walk away graciously from that which is not for you. That takes real courage, not relentless hustle.
So I read Martha Beck's book, The Way of Integrity.
Yes, I love that book. It's
that
a wonderful
was a game changer for me in understanding that what integrity meant for me moving forward after reading that book and really like trying to implement her thought processes into my life, was that what integrity meant for me was like making sure that all my cogs were working the way that they were supposed to, so that my theoretical airplane could like go soar, right? But if my internal cogs aren't working properly, or there's something off, like nothing is going to work right, I'm never going to be able to fly.
Exactly.
Right? Not in the way that ultimately, like you're saying, brings like true fulfillment.
If any part of what you're building is a lie, and that's what Martha's talking about, if any part of this is a lie, a Faustian bargain, a deal with the devil, a compromise of your soul, then it doesn't matter how high you fly, that Faustian bargain will always be part of the engine. and it will ultimately topple you. And that's what I'd like most people to avoid. There's a Karen 1.0 and a Karen 2.0. Right. Karen 1.0, I'll just give you one example of where my life, because I'm one of those people who did everything right and got everything they wanted and then hated it. And that is a real thing.
Yeah.
I, for example, married a tall man in my earlier years. And everybody knows that's totally the apotheosis of all our desires and dreams, right? Tall man, outwardly looking successful. But I married him because I was afraid of dying alone. I was afraid of being single after the age of 30. I was afraid of that he was my last chance because the guy before him rejected me. And I thought that maybe I wasn't very good. And as a result of that, my self-worth was compromised. When my self-worth was compromised, I made the Faustian bargain of marrying a man I did not love. That is an ultimate betrayal of the soul. And then it ended up being an abusive relationship, a horrible place, real gilded cage, a beautiful house with all the accoutrements in which I felt I was so trapped that I actually considered suicide in the shower one night. And that's one of the main things I reveal in Gilded. Let's now cut to what happens when you make deals from a very different place of integrity. I am now remarried. I've been remarried for 7 years to a man named Ryan, who I hope never, ever dies because he is the love of my life and the most delightful person. I mean, just wait till you meet him. You're going to love him so much. I remember that being such an easy yes and such a clear and resonating yes that had absolutely nothing to do with whether he was tall or not or whether he was rich or not. Just you. You're right for me. That is a completely different energy exchange. That is a place of making a decision from who you truly are rather than what you think you're supposed to do or should do to avoid loss. And that's how it works.
How many people do you think stay in marriages because of that?
I unfortunately think the vast majority do. It's funny, you're meeting me this. So we launched Gilded 3 months ago. And last week, the publisher contacted me and asked me to write the sequel, Gilded Relationships. And that's because it's so interesting because I thought that we were going to take this book out and talk to people about success and about building business. And obviously, that's part of my MO. It's part of what I do as an executive coach. But it turns out, Nikki, that if love ain't working, ain't nothing working. This is the cog. This is the glitch for so, so many people. When they find themselves in a marriage that, let's say, is functioning in a few dimensions, the parenting is going okay, the responsibilities are relatively shared, but at the same time, they haven't had sex in 7 years. They tend to take vacations each individually, separately. What I like to say is that this is actually a silent divorce or a roommate agreement. This is not a marriage. And when we compromise ourselves that way, imagine the toll that takes on your body and on your psyche in your day-to-day life, because you know you are essentially living a lie. That has to end. So I hope Gilded begins people's journey into the courage that it takes to allowing yourself to ask for more for your life, to have the audacity, as you say, I love your Instagram post so much, the audacity to be her. Be the woman who truly believes that she deserves a relationship that is wonderful and a business that is wonderful. And Gilded Relationships next year will hopefully take you the rest of the way.
That's so exciting. And I can't wait to dive into that. You know, on a last bit on the divorce note and the ending of relationships, you know, I've spoken to so many people, especially since my divorce, about the different psychological reasons why a man or a woman will not get a divorce or whatever. And I've spoken to a lot of like high earning men about the reasons why they don't. And they don't usually tell me this flat out, but a lot of them don't want to part with their money. Okay. Right. A lot of them, I hear, don't want
that's
to part
with
their money.
Yes, that's very true. Yes. I talk to a lot of very high earning men, by the way, a lot of high earning women. If you're in the very many millions, you're going to have to part with your money. That's one of the things that is destabilizing.
And that's hard, but it's also for a lot of thing. People.
It's also ego.
Well,
the stigma of divorce, the stigma of I couldn't make it work. And then, of course, what they usually use is, as a shield is the children. They'll usually say, but this is also going to be disruptive for the children. When what's truly disruptive for children is misery at home.
Well, and witnessing their parents live inauthentically.
Absolutely. Right?
And like they can see it, by the way. Us. Of course, they're looking to us.
Yeah.
Like they're watching us and
they
they're
can
learning
see it.
How to be a human. That's what's happening. So they're digesting everything that they see and they witness and feel. They are learning, oh, this is how we be a human. Like this is the prototype. This is the blueprint.
Exactly.
Like, and this is how I can grow and be an appropriate human. Whether they say something a certain way or not, or they tell us something and they do something else. They watch what they
absolutely
digest what they feel and what they see and like everything that they observe.
It's so true.
But on the note of party with the money, I remember it could, and I'm bringing this up because I think it's a tangible example.
Loss aversion, yes.
That you're of loss aversion, right? And I'm thinking, well, if we are so abundant, if I'm such an abundant human being, then I can double down on myself. And I've said this many times in other articles, interviews. I'm like, I double down on me because I know that I can go out and make money, make a living, help people do this. I know that about myself. I know that because I'm living in my divine purpose, right? So when people are scared and they have a loss aversion, whether it's because of ego or loss of money, and I'm like, you can go create it, right? Yes. Like, this is the price to pay for your freedom. And
yes,
guess what? Money is just an energy.
Yes.
It's a form of energy. It's a paper, right? It's not even a paper anymore. It's a number on a screen.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? It's not even most people don't even have the tangible paper in their wallets anymore. But no. It's an object that signifies how much energy you put into doing something,
yeah,
and what you received for that energy.
That's right.
And so when people are nervous about like parting with their money, or that is a main concern, I'm like, well, this is really just an energy exchange here.
Well, what it means is they're not really a superstar and they don't believe they're really a superstar. So let that energetically sink in. So that gentleman or woman, if they start talking to me about how terrible it is to part with the money, I always say, well, you must not really be as big of a superstar as you look.
That's right.
Because you definitely aren't playing the game right. When we got divorced, my ex-husband looked at me across the room from the courthouse and said, see, I've gotten everything. And I was like, first of all, there was nothing to begin with. And second of all, I'm going to be just fine. In other words, take it. And I knew that I was going to be extraordinarily much, much wealthier than I was with him when I would release myself of the burden of this incredibly irresponsible human being. I feel the same way now. I also give the example of a very beloved client who went through a business severance. And in business severances, they really do not like having to pay off the other business partner.
Sure.
And I always say, if you pay off the business partner at this juncture, when the business is this size, and then you grow it to that size, but no business partner, look at all the profit that has now been released just for you. I recently asked just such a client, aren't you glad you broke up with your business partner before the business went so bananas through coaching? And she's like, yes, yes, I am.
Amen.
That's exactly it. When you stop playing the odds of loss and you start playing the odds of winning, your currency and the frequency of real money, of abundance, start to match up and you cannot lose. That's the game.
So when you talk about this gilded cage of ambition, you know, we know what that means. You've discussed that.
Yes.
What's the first step out of that? Like when you
love
like,
it,
you gotta know that you're stuck. Do people even know that they're stuck?
No, they do. They do. They're just not recognizing it because the emotions are kind of bad. And so they numb the emotions, which means that the first step in my book, which by the way, is a 12-step process, just like Alcoholics Anonymous, is identical to the first step in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is admit it, your life does not feel as good as it looks. Now, this sounds like a small step, but it is an enormous step, Nikki. Those of us who are divorced
know
that there was a moment where we couldn't not face reality. We had to admit this is not working. And all the excuses and the numbing that kicked into place, it's fine. It's okay. I can live with this. This is fine. I don't want to go through divorce. I don't want to go through divorce. Really changes. And you go, there's nothing I can do here. I really have to fix this. All addicts say the same thing. Karen, I got this out under control. It's fine. I can stop drinking whenever I like. And I always go, honey, this isn't going to change until you recognize that this has unfortunately taken on a momentum of its own. And that brings me to step two, which I'll also reveal here if it's okay with you.
Of course.
From that moment on, your job is to do what Martha Beck says in her book. Her whole book is dedicated to one thing. Stop lying. Just stop lying. From that moment on, truly show vulnerability, show real honesty, show the capacity to reveal what has gone wrong so that you can truly confront it. That's where the magic starts to happen. There are more steps, but if you can just do that, honestly, that's 50% of the way.
So, Karen, you know, I recently in April, I celebrated 5 years of continuous sobriety and I turned my life over to the care of God as I understand God. I believe my life had become unmanageable, completely unmanageable. And from the outside, my life looked amazing. I was gilded, right? I was gilded up. And nobody would really pinpoint that I had such a severe addiction and So in turning my life over to the care of God and just admitting, I think the admission of it is a tremendous step. It is important for people because a lot of people just don't want to admit it. They don't want to admit that something has to change, whether it's in a business or a drinking habit or a gambling habit or a sex addiction or in their business. You know,
and there are many unrecognized addictions. They're not recognized, but they are. Ooh. Shopping addiction, scrolling addiction, numbing of any kind. By the way, workaholism, complete addiction.
Well, what it is ultimately like you're looking at to something outside of yourself to fill a void that is within.
Exactly. And that's the gilded cage. That external that you become dependent on becomes your prison. And the reason their gilded cage on the cover of my book, I'm pointing to it right now, is open, is to insinuate that you can actually walk out of it at any given time. You do have to make a decision, though, and that decision is the moment of admission. It's the moment where you just realize with great clarity, this no longer serves me. I cannot do this anymore. That's it, because it's become unmanageable. And I always say that silence, like a cancer, grows, as Simon Garfunkel says. In other words, like you say, it does become unmanageable. The lies start overtaking your life, don't they? They really start catching up with you. It starts to become more and more aggressive. Those silent voices, they don't actually silence themselves. They become louder and louder, louder. You can't outrun them. So I like to say, what I'm essentially saying is you can run, but you can't hide. You will ultimately have to deal with your soul. And I really genuinely, for your sake, hope that you do.
So where then do we come to the difference between climbing the ladder and genuine ambition to achieve your dreams, right? So like, how do people know the difference?
The difference is one of them feels good and one of them doesn't. It's that simple.
Like that
it's the difference between perfectionism and high standards. Perfectionism feels terrible. Perfectionism turns on itself. It beats you up. If you miss a workout in a perfectionist mindset, you will never stop berating yourself for missing the workout. A high standards person just goes, no problem, I'll work out again tomorrow. In other words, you move in improvement rather than you move in rigidity. It's exactly the same with ambition versus toxic ambition. All of us came here to grow. We're sensual creatures. We have one life. We all came here to be and have and do. But it is in the expectancy and the aggressiveness of outcome focus that we start harming ourselves. You know, I pride myself, Nikki, on being one of those coaches that really cares about your results. I care enormously that you get what you want, but you also get happy. Without the happy, I don't care that you sold your last business for $50 million or that you got to marry the tall person of your dreams. What really matters to me is that they are exactly your correct choices. They are authentically yours. They are delicious, and therefore they don't have a hold on you. You're holding on to them loosely. The way to build this is in the emotion along the way. In other words, to really discern whether this ambition has gotten away from you or not. And by the way, you and I have been doing this for quite some time. You got to check yourself all the time, right?
Yes.
Right?
Definitely.
Exactly. Like I'm on book tour right now. Believe me, I have to stop every now and again and go, Karen, it's time for a break now. No more. You're starting to move back into obsessive. You're starting to move back. I get it. I can see it happening. It just happens.
So do you think that when something is right for you, that it should feel easy?
Yes. I have a great example for this. Actually, he was my role model. At 45, Jerry Seinfeld had never married, and he said to Oprah that he had enjoyed his issues very, very much. He loved dating everything in sight. And then one day he met Jessica, and he said that the reason he knew that this was going to be different was because when she first entered his house, it felt like nobody knew had entered the house. She belonged there. I feel exactly the same about Ryan. I remember when I met him, it didn't feel like sparks. I mean, obviously, he's very sexy, and I thought I could feel that, but it felt more like recognition. There you are. And it's just very easy. It's the same with all things that are right for you. They are resistance-free. They are easy. Most of us are conditioned, particularly high achievers, to look for what the harder the path, the better. And I'm telling you, letting it be easy is a much more accurate indication that you're on the path.
If you're looking for deeper connection, check out the Becoming Her exclusive online community where you will meet with me and other like-minded, mission-centered women who are on the journey to the biggest, most glorious homecoming and glow-up. You can connect with me personally on Instagram at Nikki Sapp.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Expo, and we are becoming underscore her. For more information on all of the things, visit NikkiSpo.com.
I'm going to have to connect you with a wonderful, wonderful woman if you haven't already been connected. Her name is Susie Moore. She was one of the first guests on my podcast, and she has a book.
I read her book.
Let It Be Easy.
Let It Be Easy.
Yep.
And she's so correct. I like to use George Costanza as an example. For any Seinfeld fan out there, there's an amazing episode in which he basically figures out that every impulse he's ever had, every decision he's ever made is wrong. And then Jerry says, well, if every decision has been wrong, then all you have to do is the opposite, because that must be right. And he starts doing the opposite. Letting it be easy is truly the opposite impulse for the overachiever, the opposite of all of our indications and intuitions. Think about it. Loss aversion is the default. So gain desire must be the opposite. If we start making that consciously a choice for ourselves and really start asking myself, how can I let this be easy? As our way forward, we're going to make way better decisions in love and in life.
There's something to be said about, you know, the pursuit of high performance, which we were kind of touching on, and you've worked with a lot of these top executives and Olympic athletes. Like, what do you think is the first thing that they tend to sacrifice? Are people in these high performing, high achieving positions that they tend to sacrifice without even realizing it?
Well, they're sacrificing usually their time first and foremost. And that means that the first thing that we work on is their speed, not their aim, not their eagerness, not their intensity, just their speed. They're moving so fast that they can't even see how much has gotten away from them.
When you're saying this, I have a pit in my stomach.
Like, I know, because you think you're going
to
lose.
Imagine it. Well, like, even to imagine feeling that way, like, it's like you're running. It's like you're running away from something instead of towards something. Right. It's like,
but that's what they're doing. They're numbing. They're numbing the shame. They're numbing the pain. That's what they're doing. They're running. They're trying to outrun their feelings of unworthiness. And the only way to feel worthy is to slow down time and give yourself time. This means that the first thing we work on is reversing reactivity. In order to do that, of course, I have to tackle your worldview, scarcity, very likely, which is the only reason you'd ever run. And that's it.
This is so overwhelming, right? Like, a lot of this, people must come to you and they're like, well, I want to feel happier and I want to feel better and I want to be
And can you do it in 6 weeks? And can we do it without talking about my mom? And I always go, nope.
Right. People want the quick fix. Like, they don't, yeah. I don't think a lot of people understand like what goes into this. Like, and so you even say something about worldview. I'm like, I talk to people all the time and I'm like, this isn't about the cheesecake. This isn't about like the podcast award that you want to win. Like, there's like an underlying story that people are telling themselves about whether they deserve something, how life should be. And going back to easy versus hard, like, I remember seeing a meme on the internet somewhere and it was like, it was kind of like mocking a woman who wanted an easy life. And it's like, well, what should I want? Should I want a hard life? Who told me? What story? What was told to me that life shouldn't be hard?
But most people do have that story. You know, before I made my transition to Karen 2.0, I used to have this giant sign in my living room that said, nothing worth having comes easy. Yeah. I remember physically ripping it out with my own hands because it was such an ethos. And this is a dominant ethos in our society. So in order
Nobody cares, work harder.
God helps those who help themselves. This is a dominant factor in our society. So in order to overwrite that, you have to first acknowledge that this is a cultural lie. And in order to do that, you really do have to go through a process. Now, I always say, listen, my process, my foundation coaching program, Nikki, is 3 months. That's nothing. But the most amazing thing that happens is afterwards, you don't want it to end. All of a sudden, you have all the time in the world. That's why so many of my clients join the club or continue to work with me for years. It's because you finally, when you discover how good it feels to feel good and to act from there, you never want it to end. It's ironic, isn't it?
It is.
I went to my first coach the same way Brene Brown did. I was like, listen, here's the deal. Here's what I want. Here's how I want it. And here's by when I want it. Go. And by the end, I was like, don't leave me. I'm going to miss you forever.
Well, the beauty in that is that, like, you get to do the work forever, right? Because, like, you're continuously evolving. And then, you know, like, very naturally, the goalposts change, right? You achieve your goal. I think, you know, and I read, my son is named after Santiago in the book, The Alchemist. And I think that one of the main themes that Paulo Coelho tackles in that book is, like, the having of the dream, right? Like, we have the dream of what happens when you have the dream. A lot of people would rather just have the dream because, you know, hope is so powerful. It's such a powerful emotion and experience for people to get through life, right?
That's right.
That's why the idea of heaven is so strong, right?
So pervasive,
It gives people the hope of something better on the other side. You know, where I, you know, we can get into this woo-woo stuff, but I believe that we're here in heaven and earth, and I gotta make this for something. Like, I think this is equal heaven and hell, both parts, like, in a lot of ways. And so I have to live it in now, because I truly, for me, I don't have a guarantee of what's beyond, but I think that, like, the idea of the heaven is that dangling of the dream, the dangle of the hope, like, the dangle. Yeah. And that keeps a lot of people rooted. And I think that hope, you know, without it, it can break the human spirit. It really can. I believe that.
I agree. I actually remember discovering Pascal's wager many years ago. My parents are not people of faith. And I was really contemplating the idea of, should I just adopt the mindset of believing in God because it's useful to me? And then I came across Pascal's wager, which is a philosophical wager from about 200 years ago. A philosopher named Pascal just basically quadranted it out and showed that to believe, even if you don't believe, is still more useful and more conducive to better results than to not believe and to decide to not believe. And that's essentially the wager I made. I just decided that we don't really have conclusive evidence for God, and we don't have conclusive evidence against God. I'm sorry for people who feel very deterministic about this, but there are no conclusive pieces of evidence in either direction. So then I just asked myself, what is the kinder thing to believe? What is the more useful thing to believe? And that's pretty much it. That began my own spiritual journey. I read The Alchemist many years before. It just never sank in. And finally, right, I started to understand the words of that wonderful book. By the way, love to Santi. What a great name.
Thank you. Thank you. I think that his life's mission, the character's life mission, you know, and going on this journey of realizing the dream and what comes after that, I think a lot of people would rather not realize their dream so that they can continue to have the dream, right? And, like, having that but never achieving it also, you know, they obviously hold us back, but there's some hopes in that. And so you have these,
yes,
archetypes of people who are overachieving and high performing. Then you have other people who are, like, they don't want to realize their dream because then what do they do?
This is a shame, but I find that very Don Quixote, and I understand it too. I'd much rather people live in their head happy than anywhere else anyway. So I'm kind of okay with it. In general, though, we did come here to realize our dreams to a certain extent. And so I think that not to attempt them in any extent is a cop-out. It doesn't matter if I don't reach basketball levels of Michael Jordan's caliber. At least I tried to play basketball or to activate whatever it was he represented for me in this lifetime. Yeah. So we can all do something smaller in it. The problem with the overachiever is it's very all or nothing, right?
Yes, exactly.
And that's, again, perfectionism or ambition gone wrong. So hopefully what we're trying to do next is to modify your desire to a place where you can really bring it down to building it systemically, which ultimately, by the way, will end you up with what you want. So don't worry, you're not releasing the ambition. You're just learning how to actually get what you want.
So while we talk about perfectionism, you know, I think that there are probably a lot of listeners in our audiences that are perfectionists. And so what are some of the practical ways that leaders and thought leaders and people who are just in pursuing the dreams in general, how can they start to unlearn perfectionism, like a tangible, like, tool, takeaway? Like, what advice do you have so that we can unlearn perfectionism and begin to embrace a sense of purpose instead?
I have a couple that are very important to me because they changed my game. There are several in Gilded. There's an entire chapter dedicated to this. Based on the work of Dr. Kristen Neff, who I'm delighted to be meeting next month for my podcast, mm-hmm, and Dr. Brené Brown. I just really love their work. It's such a deep study of what compassion for the self is and what the building of worth is. But the two that changed my life that I want to share here are, number one, get out of your own head and go serve somebody else.
I literally said this the other day, and it's, like, pinned on my profile, is that the antidote to suffering is service.
Absolutely.
I believe it in my
absolutely
core. And it's the 12th step in most 12-step programs of recovery, is to be of service to another XYZ,
yes,
who is sick and suffering.
I think that all suffering is an overfocus on the self. Feel free to disagree with me on the internet. I don't care. My suffering ended the day I decided to volunteer on a suicide hotline, which, by the way, was also the birth of this career, whether I knew it or not. I started to watch other people, care for other people, think about other people. And that did two things for me. Number one, it put my issues in perspective.
That's right.
And number two, it allowed me to feel much better about myself too, because I was in service of other people. This will ultimately raise your vibration and you will start to live in a different way. There is nothing that can beat service. The second is to learn how to speak to yourself with self-compassion, with kindness, and with forgiveness. My hack for that is I keep a baby picture of myself in my office, and I always remind myself, I don't know about you, but I would never be mean to a baby. Would you ever be mean to a baby?
No, of course not.
So every time I have the impulse to say, oh my God, Karen, another typo in your newsletter, I start thinking, it's okay. Everybody makes mistakes. It's nice that you have a typo. It proves to the audience that you're the one writing these newsletters and not AI.
That's right.
You're okay. You can fix this. It's fine. When we learn how to speak to ourselves this way, when we learn to say there is still time, there is still time. You have done good things before. You will do them again. When you start to speak to yourself gently, you start to cultivate a true level of worthiness. Everything goes up with that. That's a practice. And I live by both.
I was estranged from my mom for many, many years. And I had a lot of a very complex relationship with her. And when she passed away, I hadn't been able to clear that. And something that I did after her passing is I started to view my mom as a little baby, and I started to view her and show her the compassion, you know, that she came into this world pure. Her soul was pure and she was this tiny little baby, and the world happened to crush my mom, you know, over and over again. And my mom didn't have the tools, the resources to get out of her own sickness, right? And for me, in order to forgive my mom so that I could free myself, you know, from resentment, ultimately, I started to imagine my mom as a tiny little baby born in 1948 in Puerto Rico, and the kindness that I would have shown that little baby. And it was like this really, really powerful and magical, like spiritually generational, like experience for me to do that, you know, as an adult woman now thinking about my mom in the mid 1900s.
Yes.
Coming into this world. And ultimately, I was able to forgive my mom and live a more happy, joyous, and free existence because of that.
How beautiful. You know, this is why I keep saying that the term self-love is incorrect. Self-forgiveness is the real one.
Yeah.
And forgiveness as a word, as an action. Mercy is really the elevation of the soul. If we can cultivate that. And if you think about it, most high achievers are living in the opposite of mercy.
They're
living like sharks. They're living in condemnation. And you know what sucks about that? Yeah, you can get away with it for a while because you become a very good shark and you get a kick out of the fact that you've actually managed to tame the problem, but you end up surrounded by sharks. Who wants to live that way? What if instead you did what Nikki did? And that's the most important thing. I said this again and again to every one of my clients, regardless of who their mother was. Forgive your mother. Find a way to see them in their purity and let them go. Because that's the only way we'll ever let ourselves go.
So we have your first tip to getting out of perfectionism to go back. I wrote it down in my notes.
We have service.
So we have service.
And the other one is talking to yourself.
Own head and into service. And the second is talking to yourself with self-compassion.
With real compassion, like you would, like you're talking to a baby.
Yeah. I mean, that's
it's
really
quirky,
really cool.
But it's awesome. And it also starts to remind you of your own humanity, which is the most important component of the work of self-compassion. I talk about Monica Lewinsky a lot because I loved her TED Talk so much. I just saw that she has a podcast. I love that she just started by saying, I know what you think of me, but if you really think about it, I just made a mistake. Raise your hand if you've never made a mistake. And I just thought, exactly. Forget the fact that she was 22 when this happened. And with due respect, was not the villain in this story. She just made a mistake. We keep treating ourselves as villains and then living our whole lives to pay for that mistake instead of just saying, it's okay. I made a mistake. I'm going to start over now. That would be much better for you.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it is like how we define ourselves. You know, for me, I had to go through a process of like, once I finally came to terms with the trauma that I experienced as a child, I was like, well, I'm a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. And I had to cling on to that, right? I had to cling on to that definition. And what I didn't realize is, while it helped me in some ways, like have the courage to face it and own it and move through it, over time, I realized that
holding on to that title wasn't serving me. It was keeping me stuck. Right. Mm-hmm. And even still, like, I moved on. Well, now I'm a wife and now I'm a mother and now I'm a divorcee and now I'm, you know, now I'm a sober person. And so I've moved away in general from titling myself, you know. And so I have it like everybody has an Instagram bio, everybody has their long bio, their short bio on their websites and everything. And again, like coming back to how we even started this conversation, it's like, are we our bio? Like, I don't know, like that I am a multifaceted human. I don't know that any one thing can define who I am.
No. We're not. We're just a human being. I happen to be a really nice person who loves cats. That's probably the most accurate definition of me. And that's ultimately the only thing that's constant too. Everything else, what that's so important that you're saying it, is really just a title. And it's a temporary title. And if you want to rock this life, then you have to know when to put the title down.
So in Gilded, you talk about the emotional side of business, right? Because business is emotional. And I don't think a lot of people know this. We're talking about sharks. We think about a shark, we think about like a non-emotional being just like going in for the kill. But you talk about the emotional side of business. What role does emotional intelligence play in real sustainable leadership success?
Oh, it's pretty simple. Loss aversion means loss. Just so you know, the more you focus on what you can lose, the more you're making mediocre steps that will actually ultimately stifle your business and get you stuck at a certain level, and the more you're likely to lose or suffer losses. Now, many people think, no, this is the pragmatic way to think, Karen. I'm just covering my ass. Everything is actually, as a result of this, going to be good. And I always say, technically speaking, you're not playing like Kris Jenner. I like to joke that my real mother is Kris Jenner, which is why my name begins with a K and my hair is dark. I don't think that woman has ever played not to lose. I think she always plays to win.
That's incredible.
I really do. Whether you admire or don't admire what she's done with it, you can't not admire the size of the game. 100%. And clearly, this is a person who just goes, oh, good, lemon, let's make some lemonade.
Let's go.
What do we do with this? How do we turn this around? We're going to have some fun around here. I'm not speaking for the rest of the family. I'm speaking only for her. And I truly find that this is the mindset that fuels business success, because ultimately that means it doesn't really depend on the high or the low of anything. Those are both illusions. The only thing that matters is that directionally we are going up. This is how I've learned to feel about my business. And that's why I take bigger and bigger risks, not with abandon, but literally because I'm always playing the game of what if this pays off? What if this investment pays off?
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. Again, doing the opposite, like George, rather than my impulse, which is stay in bed, don't grow, this is fine. I've learned to really unleash Karen, who is playful and who wants to take risks and who wants to try new things. That's very, very exciting. And that ultimately has a tremendous impact on your business. Think about it also in terms of the growth trajectory of the business. The second thing I'll say is, when you play with loss aversion, the very best you can hope for is to 2X your business. Because all you can think of is just do a lot more of what I'm already doing, exhaust myself to death, but at least I know it already works. Now, have you ever doubled your business? Yes, you have. What usually happens when you just double your business is your profit margin shrinks. So have you really doubled your business? No, you have not.
So true.
No, gracias. So really the only thing you can think of is to 5X or 10X your business. In order to think that way, you have to think a completely new way. You have to try completely different things.
But
you need courage.
And how do you help people get there?
I help them to get to there first by removing their emotional obstacles to growth, which, believe it or not, are all their limiting beliefs, the mind basura garbage that's rambling around in there. And then by closing in on a much heavier target than ever before, usually a 3X target, don't worry, I don't go bananas right away. And then by showing you step by step how to think exponentially broadly to do that.
So it's a thinking. This is all rooted in our
thinking. This is all thinking.
And like, you know, how powerful our brains can be, but this is where we live here. We live here. We live here in our body. We have to take care of our body. But like, we also have to, this is also why like the mental health boom has been so important, right, for people, because we're finally putting language to things that nobody was talking about before.
I mean, I couldn't be a bigger advocate. Listen, I used to be broke as a joke and married to a really mean man. And here I am today. Like, this is all mindset. This is not Karen won the lottery and fell under a lucky star. And it wasn't hard work either.
So, but that hard work, right? Like, we live, I think we're moving away like from the girl boss, the whole girl boss mentality.
And I hope so. Really, it was terrible. And hustle is a ruse to deceive people. That's why I dislike the word hustle.
I get chills. I get the heebie-jeebies thinking
the
about
cringe.
It. I cringe. I'm just like, oh, right? So if the hustle culture is outdated, how can leaders get beyond the hustle and shift towards success without sacrificing the results? You know, like if we're thinking about hustling and working hard, there has to be the piece here that's missing is alignment, right?
And yes, it is alignment. Hustle, so there are two ways to get you to alignment. The first is to convince you that you will not sacrifice results. And luckily for me, thanks to Adam Grant and a lot of other thinkers, there's an enormous body of research that shows that the myopic, aggressive leader that never stops actually produces far worse results in innovation, in productivity, and in resilient teams than the servant leader, meaning a slightly more chillaxed person who is mission-focused still, but a lot more flexible in their thinking and in their management style. So the first thing to show you is there are case studies to prove this, to at least build some rapport and some trust that you can go there and you will not ruin your business. The second thing to do is to show you that systems work way better than goals. James Clear.
Yes,
James Clear in Atomic Habits, who said, we do not rise to the level of our goals. We fall to the level of our systems. Systems take time to build. Processes take time to build. Procedure takes time to think through and to establish. But once you've established it, the effect of delivering on it will start to compound just like your market investments.
That's right.
Let me give you an example. I started working out in 1992 when as a little kid, I discovered Jane Fonda. I have been working out ever since. 3 times, 4 times a week. Nothing enormous, nothing aggressive. I am now almost 50 and I look fantastic. This means with almost no effort, but just literally by following my system, just go to the gym 3 times a week. That's it. I can guarantee that my results will remain solid and compound year over year because your health, the return on good health just exponentially expands as you get older, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It is exactly the same in business.
But it's compounded.
And that's where alignment really kicks in, because in order to trust systems, you have to trust. And alignment is trust.
Well, and then you have the problem of like people not wanting to, they're so scared, right? There's so much fear and they're not wanting to trust because what if it doesn't work? So why would I even begin?
Well, then stay where you are. Enjoy purgatory. Have another helping of your neurosis. I can't help you. My rabbi always says, if an old lady doesn't want to cross the street, do not drag her. And I feel the same way. If somebody's there, if they're stuck in that hell of analysis paralysis, by all means, enjoy, stay there. But if you're finally sick of it, in other words, you're admitting that this cannot go another second, then you will finally join me here. And we're going to at least show you that there is another way possible as an expander, if not as a person who took you the entire way.
Karen, this has been such a powerful, powerful conversation. I feel like, you know, there's a lot of people feeling seen, called out, or even are a little bit relieved right now, and they're not alone. Everybody, Karen Eldad doesn't just coach leaders. She helps wake them up. And if you're ready to step out of the grind and into something more fulfilling, Gilded is a must read. You can grab it wherever books are sold, and we'll link it here in the show notes. As you know, we have the Becoming Her community where we're talking about all these things every week, once a week, and we're having experts like Karen on to meet with us once a month, and we want you to be a part of that. So if you want to find Karen, to dive deeper with Karen, you can follow her on Instagram at Coach Karen. Karen is spelled K-E-R-E-N. And check out With Enthusiasm Coaching at CoachKaren.com. And if there's something she said today that struck a chord, share this episode with someone who needs it. You never know the impact that one moment of clarity can create. And so Becoming Her listeners, thank you for listening today. And remember that success without self is just survival, and you deserve so much more than that. Karen, thank you so much for your time and energy and your wisdom and your light. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Becoming Her podcast. If you love this episode, share it with a friend who may need to hear what we spoke about today. And if you really love this episode, make sure to leave a 5-star rating and a review. Your comments are so important and valued, and they give other listeners insight on what to expect from Becoming Her. If you're looking for deeper connection, check out the Becoming Her exclusive online community, where you will meet with me and other like-minded, mission-centered women who are on the journey to the biggest, most glorious homecoming and glow up. You can connect with me personally on Instagram at Nikki Sapsbo and @becoming_her. For more information on all of the things, visit NikkiSpo.com. My hope for you today is that you are courageous and looking inward so that you can be your highest, most authentic self and go after the life of your dreams.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.